Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Problems at the post office, the issue, not keeping employees safe during the pandemic. Meanwhile, the Labor Fed and several unions targeting the maker of Ray-Bans for coming down on organizing. And today on the show, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees and the Cement Masons. Welcome to the Wednesday, July 21st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Today is our segment with the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org, and they are one of the many sponsors of the show. And today, we're going to zero in on the Veterans Administration. Joining us is Mary Jean Burke, first executive vice president of AFGE, National Veterans Affairs Council. This is number 53. They are affiliated with the AFL-CIO. Mary Jean likes to be known as MJ. She started her labor career with AFGE Local 609 out of Indianapolis, Indiana, when it was consolidated to represent the professionals at the Richard Rodebush VA Medical Center. Originally appointed in 2002 by the National VA Council to serve as National Safety Rep, MJ was first elected as the first executive vice president. That was in November of 07, and she continues to serve on her second term. She's also an active member of the Budget Committee, Legislative Committee, National Hybrid Collaboration Team. I'm sure we'll get into that. Also a member of the National Partnership Council. She's a graduate from St. Louis University with a bachelor's degree in physical therapy. That was back in 88. And she is a physical therapist at the Indianapolis VA. And now she is a board certified clinical specialist, certified by the American Physical Therapy Association in geriatrics. And MJ feels representing the workers who serve us, support, and celebrate our nation's heroes is a great honor, and it certainly is. A couple things we're going to get into today is the new emergency temporary standard, which was announced, I want to say, about 6-8 weeks ago. So we'll get an update on COVID-19 at the VA. We'll talk about the VA Modernization Act, and also we'll get into collective bargaining. Things are slowly but surely improving at the VA because under Trump, it was pretty ugly. In fact, the Department of Veterans Affairs has once again been told to reinstate and make whole the employees who had been suspended, demoted, or fired without first given a chance to improve their performance. This is a major victory for the union as well as the employees of the VA. Here's what happened. The Federal Labor Relations Authority, FLRA, rejected the VA's latest appeal to reconsider its decision that the VA had violated a union contract by disciplining employees without giving them a chance to improve. And this was just one of the many things that happened under the Trump administration. And now, I'm happy to report, we're seeing growth in union membership. AFGE just wrapped up their organizing efforts in June. In last month, you ready for this? 3,422 government workers joined the AFGE family, and that's a net growth of 199 members. You're wondering, wait a minute, how that happened? Well, you got to understand, there's people that are retiring as well, so they are at least moving the needle in the right direction. I always like to say that. Later in the show, Joe Chalky will be joining us, and Joe comes from the Operative Plasterers and Cement Masons International Association Union, opcmia.org. And I'll tell you, what a history they have. They were organized when the Civil War was going on. The year was 1864. That's right, 1864. Plaster and concrete are ageless building materials. This is right from their website. That will not fall out of favor as long as there is a sufficient amount of workers who are skilled in the arts of installation and finishing. These materials are as unforgiving as they are durable and beautiful, and skilled hands and competent management must work together to achieve the desired result and to promote and protect this vital construction resource. And you think about plaster, you don't see too much of that today because of drywall, but there's a lot of older buildings with plaster, and that's where you need skilled craftsmen and craftswomen. And Joe is going to talk about that. We'll get into the professionalism of the industry, apprenticeship programs, what they're doing recruiting, and where the work is right now. The other issue we're going to talk about is the condo collapse. And I have to thank Dorsey Hager for setting this up, giving me the connection to Joe, who is originally from Cleveland, Ohio. And he's done really well in the union. His family comes from the cement business back in the 60s. That's how he got into it. And there's been a lot of reports that the concrete was just not up to snuff. We heard about the pool deck. Another thing is salt water. I mean, it was right on the beach. Salt water and concrete do not go together. There's erosion problems, and there were warning signs years ago. So we'll touch on that with Joe Chalky. Speaking of which, I want to play a clip here. And this is courtesy of the International Association of Firefighters. In fact, they just got a new president, Ed Kelly. And they conducted the search and recovery mission in the aftermath of that June 24th collapse in Florida. And while visiting members during President Biden's visit to the disaster site, Kelly commented about the members of the firefighters, the paramedics, and all the people who are working on that. And I want to play that clip for you right now here on America's Workforce. Let's listen.
We're all very, very proud of what you've done. You know, we all took an oath to put ourselves in harm's way. And all of your training and everything you did to prepare yourself to get here, I would tell you, isn't why you're here on that pile. In my eyes, it's because God chose you to be here to do his work on this earth for those families. And it's not your job to deliver miracles. That's his job. It's your job to do your best, which is exactly what you've done so far. And I know you continue to do it. God bless you. Be you. Be strong, all right?
Again, that's Ed Kelly, General President of the International Association of Firefighters, which, by the way, continues to provide peer support services with support teams visiting fire stations and assisting at the disaster site. You can only imagine that the firefighters are probably going to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder after what they went through for the last couple of weeks down there. An investigation from ProPublica reveals the failures of the U.S. Postal Service, one of the nation's largest employers, and OSHA, to keep workers safe during the pandemic. Check this out. USPS workers filed over 1,000 complaints to OSHA about pandemic-related hazards, and OSHA responded by filing 4 violations. 1,000 complaints, 4 violations, none of which required the Postal Service to pay penalties or change practices. OSHA has 20 cases that are open right now. At least 197 postal workers have died from COVID-19. The investigation comes after the Department of Labor's Inspector General issued a report about OSHA's pandemic failures, especially weaknesses in its so-called remote inspections. Well, at USPS facilities, OSHA's absence and the Postal Service's failure to accurately track cases and inform workers was deadly. Mary Ellen Moore, a grandmother who had worked at the St. Paul facility for 35 years, died from COVID after she was not informed about confirmed cases and possible exposures at her work site, which the state health department had linked to numerous clusters. Even as Moore was struggling to breathe in her hospital bed, her daughter says that she was texting management about her illness and was worried about the division of her leave time. No COVID cases appeared in management's reports to union officials from that time. Hats off to ProPublica. That's a heck of an organization for uncovering that. I know OSHA, again, under the previous administration, was a disaster. And they're doing everything they can to catch up. But wow, the stories that are coming out. Meanwhile, the AFL-CIO, the CWA, and two other workers' groups are accusing Ray-Ban maker Luxottica, the Italian arm of Essilor Luxottica, of unlawfully discouraging 2,000 workers from unionizing through an aggressive and fear-inducing campaign at a U.S. plant in Georgia. And they have asked the Italian, French, and U.S. governments to mediate. This is an interesting story. As writers reported, the unions filed a complaint under guidelines for multinational firms set by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in an example of workers and unions turning to international labor authorities in their attempt to vindicate their rights in lieu of pursuing claims domestically through the National Labor Relations Board. According to Tim Dubnow, Tim is the deputy director of organizing at the CWA. This is what he said. Going to the NLRB would be fruitless. We know what's going to happen. We go there, the company stalls, and then spends 80 days intimidating people, acting like thugs at work, forcing people to listen to union-busting nonsense. Indeed, the CWA noted that Luxottica, like other European companies, maintains productive relationships with unions at home, but operates differently here in the United States. Why? Because of weaker labor law. According to organizers at its plant, this is in McDonough, Georgia, that produces lenses for lens crafters, Oakley, and Pearle Vision. And these are pricey lenses, too. Luxottica management has engaged in tactics like warning employees of alleged risks of unionizing through an app called LiveSafe, as well as employing an anti-union consulting firm and forcing workers into mandatory anti-union meetings. This is happening right now. Again, why? Weak labor law. The companies in Europe and various places, remember Volkswagen, when they came here, 2014, Chattanooga, Tennessee. I talk about this on the show all the time. Volkswagen wanted the union. Tennessee said no. They come here because the unions are weak. That's why we need the PRO Act. Call your senators today, 866-832-1560. Here's what you might do tonight at 7 o'clock. If you go to the AFL-CIO website, this is 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. There's a panel of people that are going to talk about the next union generation when we pass the PRO Act. AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Liz Shuler and a number of labor leaders from around the country will be on that panel talking about the importance of the PRO Act. You definitely might want to check that out and also call that number. We'll talk more about where we are with the PRO Act tomorrow with Bill Samuel, the Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation. All right, right now I got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to link up with the American Federation of Government Employees.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to our live line. And welcome to the show, Mary Jean Burke. She prefers to be called MJ. She's the first executive vice president of the AFGE National Veterans Affairs Council out of Indianapolis, Indiana. And she works at the Richard Rautebusch VA Medical Center. Did I pronounce that correctly, MJ? Rautebusch.
Flash, right? You did. Perfect. Perfect.
Okay. Good, 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 good. And she is a certified clinical specialist. She's a physical therapist for many, many years. We appreciate her coming to the show. And she's, I tell you, I was reading your bio at the beginning of the show, MJ, and I see you're on many, many committees. And one of them caught my attention. I need a little explaining on. I see the budget. I get that. Legislative. I get that. National Hybrid Collaboration Team. All right. What's that one all about?
Well, so the major occupations in VA are nurses and doctors, but we have about 35 different occupations. And because VA is the largest healthcare system in America, a lot of the professional organizations run their qualifications or the update of their qualifications set by the secretary. And so you don't want to harm old workers as they update to modernize their qualification. And so that's a group that gets together and then we work through how they're going to implement basically the new qualifications for a whole host of variety of occupations. It can go from a physical therapist like I am to a marriage family counselor to addiction specialist to chaplain services. And so that's what that group does.
Gotcha. Okay, good, good, good. All right, there's a couple things we want to get into today. Number one, safety. The safety of the workers, the safety of the patients. So important. We're still in the midst of the pandemic, and I don't know what the situation is. Mean, let's start right there. We're hearing about this Delta variant. I hear there's another variant now, and I know a lot of people are not vaccinated, and this seems to be the pandemic of the unvaccinated. What's the status in Indianapolis right now, MJ? And you can zero in on your medical center there.
Oh, good. Well, I can say from the vaccination rollout and implementation, VA, I think, from my perspective, did really terrific. And from a veteran's point of view, our stakeholders, they're not probably where they want to be as far as vaccination. Some of the data is, or they think maybe a little skewed because, quite frankly, they're not sure if the veteran has gotten the vaccine on the outside. They report it in the inside when they see them, but they're doing a massive push for vaccination of our stakeholders. If that veteran touches anywhere in our outpatient clinic venues, they're and they show up as not vaccinated. They're doing educational pushes. They're talking to the veteran about it, whether you're a physical therapist or a primary care person, and trying to get them educated on that. So every morning, the therapist gets a list of the people that they're about to see. If they're on that list, then they're having a conversation with that veteran and seeing why they may be resistant. And so that's like a, I think, a best practice probably that not many healthcare centers are doing. Our rollout for our employees has been really terrific. I think we're close to like 85% of our employees being vaccinated or higher. And there was no reason why you can't get it. And very early on, we were rolling out. I think in Vizin 10, where I'm located, and I think your radio station is located, we started probably on Christmas Eve vaccinating our employees, and then have really been at it ever since. And so I've been pleased for the vaccine implementation phase anyway.
Good. Very good. What about this new emergency temporary standard that the Biden administration came out with? And it was a long time coming. I know they wanted to roll it out. I believe it was in March. It took extra time. It's not as comprehensive as some wanted, but how does that affect the your operation and the VA?
Well, I think the main issue, I believe, of course, was that in all healthcare centers, there wasn't an OSHA standard at all that specifically addressed COVID. And so if there was safety issues, the default was really towards a general, what we call the general industry standard, or citing an employer in what we call PPE, hazard assessment, or just really generic. There just really wasn't anything they could cite the employer for so much. And then obviously in, the agency, even if the main PPE of N95s were so short that in the last administration, they wouldn't cite them for not necessarily having the PPE. It was just an analysis, for the lack of a better word, of whether they were procuring or able to procure if they were short. So that left workers really in a lurch. So fast forward to the emergency temporary standard. At least there is a requirement to get the views of employee representatives involved. There's also kind of an updating of the hazard assessment and the looking in the environment specifically related to COVID, where there wasn't before. Hopefully that kind of makes sense, Flash.
Yeah, yeah. No, I follow you. You brought up a couple of things I want to get into. You mentioned the previous administration, and we've had several conversations with people like yourself and other unions as well on how they had to deal with safety situations, the pushback on unions. I'm reading now, too. I read this earlier about employees that were fired under Trump's firing law. I mean, he loved to talk about people that he got rid of, and it was just a sad situation altogether. But how are things now? I know Biden's got a lot to unwind here, but what's the status right now, in your opinion, MJ?
Yeah, I think especially with the vaccination, it's like people feel hope. I don't think we are quite, at least my workforce, quite on edge that, specifically nurses and doctors, we went through a situation where the inspector general, was investigating a whole host of fake respirators. And so, when you weren't told as employee representatives or weren't told as workers that you were wearing a fake respirator thing, not only that you didn't have them early in the pandemic, but you were kind of wearing things that might not protect you, that facilitates a lot of psychological stress, even anger, perceptions on from employers that you're from your employer, basically, that you as a worker is disposable. I think from that aspect slash that has improved somewhat. I mean, it's not where we want as labor representatives. You know, we would like to be consulted on most topics of the conditions of the work, but specifically in regards to safety. And I think we want to be more involved as things roll forward, whether that's, you know, how are we going to prevent something like this happening again? Will we be prepared? Because, I know we're not done with COVID, but, from all the experts say, this is one, but it won't be our last type of thing. And so we have to get a handle on, everything from the information technology piece on how we, track occupational diseases within hospital systems to the workers that are exposed to those, to how we protect them, how do you ramp up quickly the PPE. So even though we're just really now focusing really on vaccination prevention, I think, I think in many cases we have a lot to be grateful for. My heart goes out really to the nurses and doctors who, I think across the system, whether you're working for VA or not, are really suffering from burnout and exhaustion as related to that. But I think things are seeming more hopeful, mostly because so many people are vaccinated within the healthcare system. You don't feel like you're necessarily putting yourself in death's doorway or, at risk and taking that risk home to your family. I think from that aspect, things are much improved.
You mentioned the burnout. A lot of that has to do with the fact that you are understaffed. And I've known for years that nationally, I think we're short of like 50,000 medical professionals at the VA across the country. What is that improving at all in any degree right now?
Well, I think what you saw, particularly with nurses across the system as the pandemic rolled out, that, what has always existed probably in the last 5 years of, nurses are kind of older. And so what we saw a lot, specifically in VA, I think, is that if people were retirement eligible and in the midst of a pandemic, they weren't going to stay very long and they were going to retire. And so, and then additionally put on top of that issues of childcare, put on top of that issues of, the private sector offering $120 an hour type of jobs, put on top of that, my kids don't have any childcare at home and I'm a single parent, I'm going to just stay home. That has, caused these kind of staffing issues, especially with nursing assistants, our physicians and our nurses, in more routine, hard to staff, the CLC units, the inpatient units. That's just exacerbated the problem, I think, more. So VA can't ever be the market leader compared to the private sector. But so, what we're doing is you got to affect the conditions of employment, which is where the union comes in.
We're speaking with MJ Burke on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees National VA Council. They have a specific website, too. It's AFGENVAC.org, AFGENVAC.org. Mary Jane, I'm going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, I want to get into the VA Modernization Act. And also, I want to talk about collective bargaining. Later in the show, Joe Chalky will be joining us on behalf of the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons International Association Union. Okay, he's a cement guy. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute, sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating, which is the best you can give us. Yeah, I'll take a five-star any day. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Mary Jean Burke. Mary Jane, or MJ, is the first executive vice president of the AFGE, National Veterans Affairs Council, number 53. And she works at the Richard Rodebush VA Medical Center. She's a physical therapist, and that's in Indianapolis, Indiana. MJ, I want to talk about the VA Continuing Professional Education Modernization Act. That's a mouthful. What's that all about? Can you explain the components
sure.
of that?
So where we left off is we need to do everything in VA to attract caregivers, basically, because we can't usually be the salary leader in a community. So this act is a bipartisan bill that increases the amount of money that VA is permitted to reimburse clinical employees for their continuing professional education expenses. And so it hasn't been updated in 30 years, and currently only like board certified physicians and dentists can be reimbursed, and that amount only goes up to $1,000. And so we're kind of modernizing who can be eligible for it. So we're expanding the pool to include nurses, pharmacists, psychologists, other basically all the hybrid Title 38 and all the professional employees. And it would increase the limits for physicians and dentists to $4,000 per year, and then establish a limit for those who are not board certified, the rest of the occupations, to $2,000 per year. And it allows basically the secretary to adjust the annual caps in the future based on inflation. So, you know, our goal, and I hopefully, because it's a bipartisan bill, is just to do anything around the margins of the conditions of employment to improve the lives of our workers.
Where are we with this legislation? Is still in committee? And what do you see as far as passage?
Right. Well, last month, Congressman Julia Brownlee from California and Congresswoman Marianetta Miller Meeks, who's a Republican from Iowa, introduced the legislation. And to my knowledge, I think it may be out of committee of the House of Veterans Affairs, but I don't think the Senate has acted on it as of yet.
All right, let's move on to collective bargaining. And where are we with that? Because I know this has been a tough road to hoe, especially under the previous administration. What's the latest there?
Well, Flash, just as late as last night, the settlement, we reached settlement between AFGE Council 53 and the VA. And so what we're trying to do is to look forward to VA making good the promises of the Biden administration, specifically to promote collective bargaining and advocacy for workers. And our job in any contracts or any union's job is to ensure that where you work is a good place to work, and make sure that whatever you're delivering is the best is that it can be. And so for our mission, which is the greatest mission of all federal agencies, is to ensure that we're delivering great care to our veterans, both in service disability benefits, adjudicating those, and in healthcare delivery in our cemetery workers. So the big thing that does is currently under the current administration, but that was a holdover from the Trump administration, is our Title 38 or physicians and doctors, which equate over 80,000 of them, could not represent people on a concept in the Federal Labor Relations Act called official time. And so that kind of resets that as, you know, what the collective bargaining is, which is our 2011 contract, to the floor. It sets basically a limited reopener of what we're going to look at going forward in the contract negotiations. It will only include 12 articles instead of the entire 55 articles. So we'll roll over a good part of it. And we were in a ton of litigation with the agency, as you can imagine. So that kind of puts to bed 10 national grievances that we had over the implementation of the Trump executive orders. And hopefully moving the parties together and getting a little bit closer. I mean, we haven't been talking to each other at the local levels a lot. You know, they just don't, they don't recognize our presence in a lot of the locations. And so that's been tough to be a union official, but it's been even tougher to go through the pandemic, being a nurse, being a doctor, who particularly the nurses, our largest occupation, and having the inability to represent the conditions of employees that directly affects you. And so that's, I think, been an emotional, the people that have been able to get themselves working off the clock, that's and suffering a pandemic, that was a huge lift for a lot of those people. So my heart goes out to them. We miss them terribly because the rest of us had to pick up the work. Sure. So at least we will, you know, be very happy to have them back and being able to kind of speak in, for themselves in committees and speak for themselves and, you know, what's wrong and what can we improve? And I look forward to that.
Seems like the last couple of years has been like the game whack-a-mole, which you're probably familiar with. Soon as you get up, bam, they knock you down. Trying to get up again, bam, right? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it helps to have a lot of endurance and perseverance. I mean, the Title 38 people have been out of, like when I say out, inability to use official time for close to three and a half years. So imagine going to work, working your full day, and attempting to answer phone calls at night when they were on breaks. If you were a leader of the local prior to being eviscerated by those Trump executive orders, then suffering a pandemic, not having PPE, you know, it really decimated, you know, people's willingness to stand up for their coworkers and get involved in the labor movement. And so I'm hopefully we will have a mental and a psychological change regarding that. And mm-hmm. we miss them. I mean, they're our largest occupation. So look forward to getting more people involved.
Well, thankfully, you have a very strong union nationally, AFGE, very strong, lots of members, and I see organizing picking up, too. I had a story on that. So, I mean, that's a reflection of the conditions that are out there. So Good times ahead. There's a new sheriff in town, as I've said, especially when Biden took office on January 20th. So just be patient and things will get better. AFGENVAC.org. Mary Jean Burke, first executive vice president of the AFGE, National Veterans Affairs Council. And that is number 53, based in Indianapolis, Indiana. MJ, great guest. Thank you so much for joining us, and let's talk down the road, okay?
Okay, Flash, thanks for having me, and to all the people in Cleveland and America, God bless America and keep America rolling.
Amen to that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk cement with Joe Chalky on behalf of the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons International.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyAndBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyAndFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. Been doing that for 50 years. They started in Cleveland, Ohio in 1971. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to a line number two. And I hope I pronounce his name correctly. Joe Chalky. Joe is with the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons International Association Union. Their website is opcmia.org. He's an international rep, and he covers a number of states in the Midwest. Did I get your name correct there, Joe?
Very, very good, Ed. Yes, Joe Chalky. Very good.
Joe Chalky. And I understand you're a Cleveland native, is that right?
Native Clevelander, that is correct.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about yourself, because I understand we chatted a little bit yesterday. I guess your family was in the cement business. Let's start there. Go ahead.
Yeah, the family was in the masonry and concrete business. And in the mid-70s, my dad and my uncles invested some money, started a subcontractor business. I got the opportunity to work with that company during the summer times. And once I graduated out of high school, I took the role as a full-time cement mason over there. Working with your dad and uncles, they're going to make you a good mechanic. And then from there, you know, we were always a union company. I had much opportunity to travel with my union card. I found myself traveling a little bit, worked in the states of Colorado, California, and Texas before I settled down in Columbus, Ohio, at which time my wife and I had three children. I worked for some large union companies in the Columbus area. Got appointed as a business agent to represent the union in 1995. In 2011, I became the business manager of Local 132, which is Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton, Portsmouth area. And in 2017, I got asked to move up to the international representative position.
Great. Great. A lot of history there. How is the union doing right now? Let's membership, recruitment, what's the status, Joe?
The status of the unions, they're steady. There's always room to grow. You find a lot of demands for both union and non-union with the work industry. Unions are strong. The unions are doing many programs to try to organize in some youth and very conscientious of their skills as well as the safety that's needed and requested in the industry for everybody goes home safely at night. So that demand creates a lot of classes that our journeymen and apprentices will take to meet the demands of the work industry.
How are we doing with the apprenticeship programs right now? I know it's been tough, and with the pandemic, you had to do stuff virtually, and that had to be ridiculous at some stages because you got to work with your hands. Navigate me through that part there, Joe. Where are we with that?
Great question, Ed. The COVID did change the way we did things, and obviously getting away from the personal on hands. We had to do some of the Zoom classes, and as we got a little more comfortable, the demand to make sure everything was sanitized, clean, students taking temperatures, and everything being cleaned every night. That was such a demand. The apprentice programs got through it quite well and are doing quite well now that we're back to some kind of normality. I know the apprentice programs are all doing well as far as growth because there is such a need for the next generation workforce, and there's such a booming economy right now. Apprentice programs are bringing in students and graduating them. So on the up and up, everything is looking good for union apprenticeship, and we're always looking to get more students into the classes.
And your territory is Michigan. All of Michigan, all of West Virginia, all of Ohio, and Western Pennsylvania. That's a chunk there. Would you say that, which is essentially, we're talking the Midwest here, would you say the work opportunities are steady throughout the territory that you represent, Joe?
Yes, absolutely. As I sit here, we're in Michigan. There is such a boom of construction in the state of Michigan for the next 10 years. It's a great, great time to try to get into the trades. They're looking at infrastructure work for roadways. They're looking at power plants, natural energy. You get into Ohio, very rich state itself, abundance of work. You have some of the big-time corporations such as Facebook, Amazon. They're growing in different parts of Ohio. Down on the southeast part of Ohio, you have the fracking going on and the power stations using the natural land to generate energy. West Virginia shares in some of that same fracking as well as Pennsylvania. And Ed, I can tell you, everywhere I travel to, whether it's this region or even down in the south, there is an abundance of work going on right now in the United States, and it's a good place to be, a good time to be if you want to get into the trades.
And I'm thinking, too, they're talking infrastructure. Something's going to happen. We just don't know the extent of it and how big the program's going to be. But you've got to be excited. I mean, that's just going to increase work opportunities, right?
Yeah, it's the roadways, the bridges, obviously a need to keep our people on the roads safe. The work is booming on the highway. I have been in conversations with ODOT, and their budgets for the next couple of years are astronomical, what they plan on spending. The infrastructure coming out of the federal money also creates opportunity to get community involvement and get community people into these apprentice programs. So the road work is phenomenal. What I'm seeing in Ohio and Michigan right now, it's great to see the road work in fixing the roads and the softness, the calmness of driving down these new roads instead of fighting potholes. It's well to see, it's needed, and it's appreciated that we're sitting in this kind of an economy right now. The road work and the infrastructure is just starting. It's only going to get better, Ed.
All right, Joe, I want to change the conversation a little bit here. And for the last couple of weeks, as you well know, America was glued to the news watching what happened with that condo collapse down in Florida. In fact, I brought it up to Dorsey Hager, Dorsey of the Central Ohio Building Trades. We had a conversation, and I said, Dorsey, you got to find somebody that I can talk to. And he mentioned you. He said, "You got to talk to Joe Chockey." and I want to get your opinion, because anything that happens, there's a connection to workers and to organized labor, essentially. If it's a non-union situation, obviously, hey, maybe they cut some costs, which they do. We all know that. But in your opinion, and you've been in this business a long time, and I'm sure we don't have any final reports. Those could take years. But I'm just wondering, I'm hearing all kinds of stories about salt water being close to the beach, cement, the fact that I guess a couple of years ago there were some inspections and things weren't taken care of them. Joe, what's your assessment of what happened down there?
Well, Ed, I'm sure there's many theories going on at this point what it could be. I will say we're blessed up in our part of the country here where we do have a lot of union representation. And with that comes a very professionalism, whether it's the working rank and file or whether it's supervision in quality control, getting these projects completed. As far as some of the theories going on, Ed, you know, we've seen the pictures of rusted rebar. We've seen the pictures of deteriorated concrete. And that happens everywhere. We also hear to talk about soft soil and the tides. We see sinkholes in Florida. We don't know what the underwater and what the tides down there built on the sand can possibly do to these buildings. But I'm a believer to think that everything starts with a sound footer. And I'm thinking that maybe there's something in the footer, which could be the soils, that is weakened, and the weight of that building took it down. When you get back to the 80s, I believe that building was built in the 80s. I don't know, Ed, but maybe there's a question, was there caissons down to the bedrock area that hold these structures in place, for there is no sinking. So, Ed, as you have many theories going on right now, I'm sure maybe every bit of this could play into the fact of what happened with that devastating tragedy down there. So I'm not going to nail it right down. It could be the deterioration. It could be the weakened rebar. But I'm going to lean a little bit towards the footers and the soundness of the, holding that building up.
So if you don't have a good foundation, then that's across the board. I mean, the building's worthless if you don't do it right then, right?
Yeah, it all starts with the soil compaction, the soil test, and every building starts with a sound foundation, a footer. It's so important, but every building starts with structure and the foundation. And really, a lot of aspects in life start with a sound foundation. So, you know, all this will play out, Ed. I'm like everybody else. I got my theories. But right away, I'm leaning towards what's holding it up. You know what I mean? And like I said, with the soils and then the professionals I have spoke with, they also lean towards maybe the tides underneath the buildings, how that moves the soils. Maybe this devastation just happened to something like that. And I'm sure in time the professionals will figure it all out and have us all an answer. But what a terrible tragedy.
Yeah, a horrible tragedy. Yeah, we played a clip from the firefighters at the beginning of the show because they were the first responders there, and they did a heck of a job going through all that rubble. It was something to watch. It really was. And again, to your point, tragic. And hopefully they'll, you know, come up with some resolve on that. And we just don't want that kind of stuff to happen. And there's got to be some methods that have to be followed in order to avoid that kind of thing in the future. Well, Joe, I appreciate your point of view on that. And it's good to hear from the Cement Masons. Website is opcmia.org. Sounds like you're a pretty busy guy traveling around those states that you represent. So I appreciate the time you carved out on the show. And all I can say is keep doing what you're doing and keep in touch, okay?
Well, thank you very much. And thank you to our first responders all the time. And in any tragic situation, they're always there for America. And God bless them. And thank you for your time, Ed. And thank you for understanding and listening to the union ways. And we will continue to move forward.
Amen, brother. Union strong. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Bill Samuel of the Labor Federation, he's the government affairs director, and the New York City Carpenters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.